Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Freaky Friday. I'm your host, Jacob Pasterfield, back here at the beautiful Frequency Winery in Kelowna, BC. And Happy New Year to everyone. This is sitting here on January 4th, the first Friday of 2019. And I'm here to talk about the heart chakra. Love, 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 the heart, all the beautiful things. The heart and the heart chakra are unbelievably amazing and profound facets of our being. And I'm very excited to share just all the things about it. So the heart chakra, for I think it's pretty easy. I think most folks are fairly aware with what the heart and the heart chakra is, or even if you say the word heart center, I feel that most people understand exactly what you're talking about. But for me, the heart chakra is just about love. All of it. All the love that exists. It's anchored in your heart, and your heart becomes a portal to all of it. When deciding which avenues of information I was about to discuss for this specific episode, there's so much. I mean, how do you even begin with the heart? You know, there's been tons of research. There's been tons of new developments with our understanding of the heart and the heart's intelligence and its role in our body. Also, there's a ton of esoteric work that's been related to the heart and living in that heart field and heart coherence. And there's just so much to talk about. But I think the best place for me to start is with 528 hertz. So 528 hertz is the center of the solfeggio frequencies. And so the solfeggio frequencies they're considered the original scale. And we have evidence of human beings using the solfeggio frequencies for something crazy, like 40,000 years. We've found these bone flutes from caves in Slovenia that were chiseled to specific frequencies. And so we've carbon dated these flutes and found out that they're ancient and ancient and ancient, and they basically were around before a lot of our information about tuning systems and specific frequencies that were used by cultures. And we found these flutes, and you know, as you would see, a lot of these frequencies are those solfeggio frequencies. So 528 hertz was one of the main notes of the majority of these instruments that we found. And 528 hertz is called the love and life frequency. And so it's called that for many reasons. My understanding is that 528 hertz has a lot to do with the frequencies and the vibrations created by the heart and the DNA even itself. When I was doing a lot of research into 528 hertz and what it meant, one of the things that I found very interesting is if you go online, it's really difficult to look for solfeggio information online. I feel like it just kind of was introduced into the collective unconscious and people just kind of went crazy with it and just started spreading binaural beats and solfeggio healing frequencies and making all these different kinds of YouTube videos for meditation and for enlightenment and for opening, you know, your pineal gland and all this stuff. And there's a lot of really good stuff on there, but there's a lot of stuff where people were just like, oh, everyone on the internet loves this. I need to release as much as possible. And in doing so, they kind of clouded our understanding as to what the actual solfeggio frequencies are. So from my understanding, it was Joseph Puello who he kind of deciphered these repeating mathematical numbers that came up in one of the hymns of St. John the Baptist. And it has to do with gematria, and it has to do with combining the numerological associations to letters in the Hebrew translations of the Bible. And he found that when he added all of the values of the numbers of these verses together, they all lined up to these very specific amounts. And so those specific amounts were the solfeggio frequencies of 396, 417, 528, so on and so forth. And so that became the basis for those solfeggio frequencies. And it's believed, and to my understanding as well, these solfeggio frequencies are very in tune with nature and the mathematics and sacred geometries that nature and the universe and creation itself manifests within. So 528 hertz is really important. So it was the do-re-mi scale on the solfeggio frequencies, and mi is short for a Latin term, mira gestorum, which roughly translated as miracles. So do-re-mi, mi, are the first letters of miracles. And that's kind of the belief that this is where miracles originate, is from existing within that space and those frequencies that the heart and the intuitive intelligence that the heart has. If we can tap into those specific frequencies, we can kind of have this ability to affect things in ways we didn't believe as possible previous to that. And so Joseph Puello, and I believe it was Alfred Tomatis, I think the two of them discovered this. I'm not entirely sure the origins, and again, there's a lot of disinformation about that. But when we started using frequencies to make our wine here at Frequency Winery, 528 hertz was the very first frequency that we would experiment with. And our winemaker realized he was playing a bunch of music beside a bunch of barrels of wine at another winery he started, and he realized that the barrels of wine closest to where they were making music were being affected by the vibrations in a way the rest of the barrels in the room weren't. And so we realized that it was the specific vibrations and the ways in which these vibrations follow the mathematics of physics and the structure of nature. The sound waves would collide against themselves and create these beautiful geometric patterns through interference phase cancellation. And so we isolated that concept. We would take a barrel of wine, we would strap speakers onto the sides like headphones, and we would blast 528 hertz into it. And what would happen was it would push all the sediment, that grape skin, seeds, and stems, into these beautiful patterns where that sediment, or the pulp essentially, would cluster, clump together, gather weight, and fall to the bottom of the barrel so we could take the good wine off top. And there's a lot of very beautiful cymatic patterns, and a lot of the stuff that you can see through Chladni plates through 528 hertz, it consistently makes this very, very beautiful geometric pattern. And that was the first frequency that we started clarifying our wine with. And so just to give you a little bit of an example as to what that's like, I have two tuning forks here, and they're both at 528 hertz. And so one of the reasons why we use these frequencies is because it's so in tune with our bodies and the resonant frequencies our body as a system of vibration creates. So what the idea of utilizing this frequency is your being is similar to a radio. And the idea and the attempt is to tune the station to the right frequency, and in doing so, all of the static is removed. So you can be up or down by just a couple hertz, but once you finally lock into that phase locking frequency, you get the little ear bunnies on top of the television just right, and it'll be able to pick up that frequency really clear, and that removes the static. And I really like that concept because it can kind of be a metaphor for our own bodies. How are we tuning our internal radios to these specific frequencies so we can get rid of all that extra static? So everything, our authenticity, our honesty, our truth becomes clearer. So part of the reason why I'm very fond of 528 hertz is it's just almost like the baseline starting point to kind of resynchronize the internal vibrations that your body creates. So just to give you a little bit of taste of what that sounds and feels like, I'm going to strike these two tuning forks three times, and we're just going to kind of vibrate out and hang out in this beautiful little vibrational sphere that'll be created. I love that. I feel it really, really immediately. I just feel the rhythm of my heartbeat kind of slow and relax, and it kind of gets into this nice state of coherence and calm. And even as I'm recording, I can watch the transients or the signal that comes in through those tuning forks, and I can zoom right in to the sound being made. And because these tuning forks have been created to create a pure note, the frequencies themselves are these beautiful uniform S curves. And so that's kind of what coherence is about, and trying to get our body into a state of coherence by utilizing our heart and our breath and by centering ourself is a really beautiful facet of existence, and it makes things really easy. And that's kind of what it means when we're living in the heart. So 528 hertz is really awesome. It's really important, and it shows up all over the place. 528 hertz as a measurement is something that we can find all over the place. NASA had recorded the sounds from the sun, and I mean, technically it's just translating electromagnetic currencies, because you technically need air for it to be sound, because an ear needs to hear it. And semantics, but they recorded the sound of the sun, and when they played it back, it was centered around the frequency of 528 hertz. Another thing that's really interesting is chlorophyll, and the color green as it grows in plants. When they take apart the atomic structure of a lot of these specific plant molecules, they can find that the resonance structure of a lot of these plants that grow a very specific shade of green, they resonate at 528 hertz. Same thing with hemoglobin within our blood. There's a lot of the frequencies given off by our blood that is similar to 528 hertz. And it relates to the carbon 6 molecule, which our bodies are created of, and the hexagonal symmetry that we find in snowflakes and in beehives, which is representative of the Seal of Solomon, which is representative of the star tetrahedron, which is the second dimensional shadow that a human being's energy field creates in the second dimension. It's all over the place. This beautiful, beautiful frequency can be found in the geometries and the mathematics of existence and creation. It can be found in the planets as they vibrate themselves around the sun, in all of these different places. And it's just really interesting how it seems that love, or the frequency for love, or the vibrational representation that love is found everywhere. And to me, I think love is everything. I think love is the primordial soup that all life came from. Because if you think about creation, at one point in time, there was nothing. But even nothing itself implies that there was something for it to be nothing of, because no thing has to have a thing to not be. So for me, there always had to be the existence of a thing, and it would make sense if that were love, because otherwise I don't think we'd be here. But if that thing was love, then understood its own awareness, and then searched everywhere to find something, to only find itself and be reflected within itself, then fell in love with itself, created this big cosmic orgasmic bang, which then became everything. I think that love itself is the first dimension. I think love is the indivisible, the absolute, the undissolvable last particle that exists within the universe. And now, that's just my speculation, so take that with a grain of salt. But for me, it just kind of seems to make sense how everything is a facet of love, and love trying to experience itself and express itself through the aperture of, you know, the human design, and each individual is their own little lens for universal love to look its way through. Oops, sorry, my microphone is falling over here. All right, sorry, I'm going to cut all that out. And we're back. Sorry about that. A little bit of gravity hanging out. So this is what a lot of people speak about when they talk about living in the heart and heart-centered living. So a lot of esoteric beliefs stem from the concept that as we are growing, when we are a child, we are just infinite love. You know, and we were a product of love. Creation itself, through the love of two human beings, created the beauty of life itself. And so as we're born, we are just unbridled, unfiltered love. And as we go throughout our love, we approach every situation 100% heart open. But we come across a situation that tells us to stop and tells us to stop acting like however that was. And we come up, oh, hey, I love you. Someone goes, no, shut up. You can't. And prevents you from ever doing that again. We create these blockages. We then stop love from flowing out into our life. And that trauma or those hardships make us close ourselves off. And so living in the heart is where you tune in to your own heart and you listen to the intelligence that your heart itself has to say. I'm very fond of an organization in the States called HeartMath. And HeartMath has done years and years and years of research as to what exactly the heart itself is. And so, you know, for millennia, most people just assumed the heart was just a pump, just used as a foundation for the movement of blood. But one of the things that's really interesting is we're realizing that that isn't the case and that our heart has its own form of intelligence and acts very similar to our brain. And even if we go deeper, a lot of scientists are coming forward with the understanding that even as an egg impregnates, or sorry, as the sperm impregnates the cell, we used to think it was just the fastest swimmer that gets there is the one that creates that life. But a lot of scientists are realizing that it's not so. A lot of scientists are beginning to understand that what actually happens is there are a collection of sperms that come around the outside of the ovum. And apparently it takes 12 or so sperm, and what they do is they're at the wall of the ovum and they will vibrate the specific frequency related to the resonant frequency of that sperm or the life force behind that sperm itself. And what the egg will do is based off of the egg's intuitive intelligence, it will select that vibration to allow that to enter and impregnate the ovum itself. And so the egg itself chooses what life to create based off of the harmonic frequencies being created by the sperm. And in doing so, that's what begins cellular gestation. And if you can ever look at the geometries or the biological structure that happens when a cell begins dividing, the first cell splits into two. And the two kind of bond in the middle. And what happens is it creates what's called a vesica piscis. And so a vesica piscis is, you know, back when you were in school and you were drawing all these diagrams or even online, you'll see all these memes where it's got two circles and they intersect in the middle. And there's that little kind of petal leaf looking crossover overlay in the middle. And that's the place where these two spheres combine. And in between that, in that little leaf looking shape, if you notice, it's very identical to the vagina or to a womb, and kind of like a portal that love and creation can stem out of. So even down to the actual shape of a cell being born, it follows these specific geometries that are reflective off of the mythological story of creation as life expressing itself. So I know this is all really kind of out there stuff, but you wouldn't be here if you didn't like stuff that was out there. But those are things that are I'm super excited to get into. I'm just not quite ready to get into sacred geometry just yet. But eventually those cells build and build and build and double and double and double, and they follow Fibonacci and they follow binary sequences of mathematical growth, and eventually comes to 512 cells, and then that becomes the whole human body. But originally, some of the very first cells that are created are the heart. And so some of those first original few cells created when birth and life itself begins, some of them, as our body is developing, stay in the heart. And at one point while you were developing in the womb, you were just a heart. A heart is the first part that develops. And then some of those cells that are created within the heart go up to the brain and become our brain, and some go down into the gut and they become our gut brain. And so what we're kind of realizing now is that our brain itself isn't the only facet through which our consciousness and our intelligence stems from, but the heart itself is a very important part of our thinking process, and it's a brain in itself. And the gut is another form of intelligence. It's another kind of brain that we have within our body. And we'll get into gut intelligence when we do the sacral and solar plexus chakras. But it's really interesting because at one point in time, you were just a heart. And then your nervous system developed, and then your b- bones and your body and all these things develop. But back then, there was one time where you were just a heart. So we kind of start our lives as love, as a product of love, being only love. And then another thing that the more I get into a lot of different spiritual concepts, it's very much believed that the tongue is connected to the heart. And so this to me just makes so many beautiful parallels of what it really means to be speaking from the heart. You know, we can literally use the giant muscle of a tongue that we have kicking around in our mouth for so many things. And so when we speak from the heart and we speak our love, it becomes very powerful. And our tongues themselves, I mean, I'm sure if you use an imagination, you can think of a lot of ways to share love with your tongue, but that's not what this podcast is about. So the heart intelligence itself is something crazy. We've uncovered more than 40,000 neurons within your heart. And so the heart itself has a very strong electromagnetic field, and the energetic output created by your heart is hundreds of times more powerful than your brain. And, you know, your heart itself secretes hormones like oxytocin, and the oxytocin is considered the love chemical. And so when we can attune ourselves, when we can tune that radio station back into the frequencies that our heart is giving off, we can kind of come into these states of coherence and producing healthy heart rhythms and states of harmony. These states of coherence are really important because these coherence patterns that our heart regulates become very beautiful, even physically. We can hook someone up to EEGs and measure the speeds of their heart. And when we're in states of gratitude, in states of love, in states of joy, what happens is the coherence wavelength patterns of our heartbeat rhythms, instead of being sporadic and asymmetrical, once we hit that state of coherence, these vibrations themselves become beautiful, beautiful sine waves. There's symmetry, there's beauty behind them. And you know, these coherence patterns are ways for us to overcome the shame and the guilt and all of these different lower vibrational states that sometimes come over our bodies. You know, we have the opportunity to grow and expand through them by creating the coherence of our heart. And so the heart field itself and the heart electromagnetic field can feel those emotions from other people. It can empathize. You know, you can walk into a room where there was just a fight and you can feel that tension. Or you can walk into a room where people had just come through a beautiful breakthrough, or maybe people had gathered together through healing session or for anything heart-centered, and you can just kind of come in and feel the love that exists. And it almost becomes this paint that we plaster around us in every way, and it becomes so tangible. We can kind of feel it. So the heart field can begin to sense something, and it'll send that information to the body and to the brain. And this information happens much faster than we can really understand, but we are very prone to thinking that if it can't be rationalized and if it can't be thought through, then it doesn't have as much validity. But living in the heart and being guided by your heart, usually you have to follow pathways that don't adhere to the logic and the rational, because that's not the heart's job. That's the brain's job. The brain's job is to rationalize and compartmentalize things and to fit things into the decided reality we are allowing ourselves to participate in. But the heart kind of understands things on a much deeper level, and the heart kind of has an opportunity to place you into the, to put you into the places that you benefit from the most. And so when we can create this state of cohesion through our hearts with other beings, we create that connection that oxytocin, you know, releases. I mean, there's serotonin and dopamine, which are great, but you can basically just influence those with party drugs. But it's really difficult to create that oxytocin release because it only releases in moments of very, very deep and profound heart bonding. It's believed that children, when they're first born, when they create eye contact with their mothers and their fathers and those their parents, that oxytocin is released. And in doing so, it physiologically creates a very strong bond in between the parents and the child. And this bond can happen through so many different things. I think we have a tendency to think that love is only supposed to exist between partners, but there are so many different shades of love that it's really important not to neglect any of them. There's platonic love, there's friendship love, there's familial love, there's love for your pets, and then there's love for your partners and sexual intimacy and relationships and growth through all of that that happens. One of the research papers that I was reading at HeartMath was speaking about the heart intelligence from pets. And so they had these little EEG monitors, and they put one on the dog, the family dog, and they put one on the owner. And so what they wanted to do was they wanted to see what was happening in the pet's heart as the owner was coming home from work. And so most cynical scientists were under the impression that the dog was just familiar with the time of day in which the owner was coming home from work. And it was more of a circadian rhythm thing than it was any form of heart connection. So the wonderful scientists at HeartMath decided that what they would do was they would just kind of monitor if this was the case. So sure enough, as the owner would come home from work around 5:30, they would notice an excitement within the dog's heart rate. That's to be understood, creatures of habit doing what they do, so on and so forth. But what ended up happening was there were a few days where the owner had the opportunity to leave work early. And what he would do is he would pack up his work at 2:30 and head home and be home for about 3. But what they noticed is at the exact moment that the owner was getting ready to leave for work, they noticed an increase in activity from the pet itself. And so this led them to believe that the heart coherence created by a loving pet and a loving owner created a bond that was electromagnetically so strong, the dog could perceive when the human being had decided he was going to come home through the interconnectivity of that love field and that oxytocin bond they had created. The bond was so strong that it literally created a connection that would span over distance. So again, things that are a little bit out there. Things that we're not necessarily supposed to believe, but I'm sure you believe lots of things you're not supposed to. Those are the most fun things to believe in. Okay. So I'm ranting a little bit. More of a tangent than a rant, but so the heart is really cool. So the heart, what it does is it sends information through the cardiac nervous system. It then goes through the spine and the vagus nerves. And remember, the vagus nerve is one of the most responsive nerves to sound in the whole body. It travels through that to the hypothalamus, the thalamus, and the amygdala, and finally into the cerebral cortex. So the information through the heart is sent through your body in all sorts of different ways, and then finally sent to your brain. That information in your brain is then sent back down into your body. Your body experiences it physiologically and somatically, and then it sends even more information back to your heart and back to your brain. So we're creating this beautiful kind of loop pattern in between our heart, our brain, and our body. And the coherence in between is what a lot of people believe a healthy state of well-being is need, or we need that to create a healthy state of well-being, is that heart, brain, body coherence. So I know I've talked about Dr. Emoto again, but I'm just still so profoundly moved and inspired by his work. And as I was reading, Dr. Emoto's done all sorts of those tests where he takes a sample of water and says, I love you, I love you, I love you to it, and finds that it will produce these very beautiful symmetrical patterns in the microscopic ice crystal patterns that would form as the water froze. He did experiments where he would take a batch of rice and put it in a room and say, I love you to it. And he would take another batch and say, I hate you to it. And the ones that they said, I love to, it flourished. It was still edible for longer than it could be. When it started to mold, it began to ferment, and there's this beautiful mildew smell. So there's just a lot of evidence that even saying, I love you, is very profound, has a very deep and beautiful healing facet and a healing, I don't know the word I'm trying to look for. It can just heal you really well, which, you know what? I'm even just going to say it a bunch right now. I love you. I love you. I love you. It just feels good to say. I hope it feels as good to hear. But so if water is so responsive to love and to messages of love, you know, think about how much of our body is made of water. And think about the sounds themselves. The reasons why we've created these specific words is so we could trigger a symbolic representation of the emotional vibrations that we're aiming to communicate. So all of the words like love and gratitude and joy are just secondary symbols that we can use to trigger that understanding of that emotional vibration that love and joy is. And that vibration then gets to exude and affect all of the things around it. So another thing that's really cool is there are so many different cultures who have consistently expressed their understanding of the importance of the heart. So even in the Chinese chakra system with Qigong, they kind of separate everything into two realms. So two dantians, which I heard very roughly translated means elixir field. And I thought that was a pretty awesome phrase. So these two dantians or elixir fields, and I apologize if that's a mistranslation, but I still kind of like the concept of elixir field. Jacob Pastor Field making elixir fields. So they have these two spheres of ki. And so it's the lower, which is the roots, and the higher one, which is the heaven realm. And so you can see these symbols and these diagrams of people sitting in their lotus pose. And there's a circle, and it goes from the root chakra. It puts in the sacral and the solar plexus. And then the top of it just overlaps. And the very top of this dantian is where the heart chakra is. And then you go into the heaven realm. And so we have our crown, our third eye, and our throat chakra. And then the very bottom part of that heaven chakra is the heart chakra. Sorry, the bottom part of that heart, the heaven sphere, is the heart chakra. So what we have is we have that overlapping of these two circles right on top of the heart chakra. And as I was mentioning about vesica piscis and that symbol being the portal for a product of love to travel through, it was one of the reasons why, to me, I consider love a portal. If anywhere that love exists, we can travel through our own heart to access where that love is. And I think that's where, whenever we have these feelings of real deep, profound rapture of the beauty of nature and the beauty of life around us, and it hits us right in the heart, we feel that and we release that. That beautiful heart-centered expression of that. We are transported to the realm of universal love, where love literally wants to breathe its way into every moment of our existence. So it's really interesting that the vesica piscis, or the womb, or this little beautiful portal of love, even the Chinese had an actual diagram representing where physiologically on the body that became possible. And as we're talking about different religious beliefs, I think if we were talking about the heart chakra, it would be pretty silly not to mention Jesus. And so Jesus, he was performing miracles. So, you know, we get back to our mira gestorum and miracles produced by heart-based living. And, you know, Christ was such a, you know, powerful figure that an entire religion was created around him. Christianity, which, you know, I try and avoid any form of religious dogma because I feel like it kind of detracts from the point and it becomes polarizing. But I find it really funny how a lot of moral compasses are centered around the concept of Christ-like living. And so how in our day and how in our days and how in our actions and how in our words can we be more like Christ, who moved through every moment with love and understanding and acceptance and forgiveness for all beings? It then becomes very frustrating that people can use a concept like Christianity and like living out of a love center to do all sorts of evil things and to create these distortions based off of religious suppression. And so it's really difficult when you talk about these things, because a lot of people have a really hard time with the even word religion or the word God. And it's because people in the name of those things have done horrible things. And it becomes very unfortunate because we reflect those distortions and those twistings of hatred. And when people have used those actions under the guise of love and under the guise of moving more like a being who symbolically represents the manifestation of pure love embodied in a human being. So it's really frustrating that people have taken these concepts. But a lot of people say, oh, well, the opposite of love is hate. And I don't believe that's so. I don't think there is an opposite of love. I think love is the absolute. I don't believe it has an antithesis. I think the opposite of hate is compassion. Because I think hatred stems from something that hasn't been loved for so long. It's crying out. It's acting out. It's creating a violence so that the tension needs to be given back to the root of that issue. A part of that hatred is just begging to be brought back to love. Hatred itself has a desire to be sated. When any time anyone acts from a state of hate, it's because a part of them is needing love so deeply and so powerfully that it distorts itself and it expresses itself in different ways. So Christ to me is a symbol and a story of a being so love-based, he changed the world. He went and hung out with the less fortunate and the underdogs and the sick and the diseased and the people who were misunderstood, and he sat with them and he gave them counsel and he helped everyone. He moved with so much love and lightness in his life that he affected everything. And a lot of what I've heard from a lot of different channelers and a lot of different researchers and a lot of different people is that what Christ was doing was he was creating Christ consciousness. And so Christ consciousness is the concept that pure embodiment of love can exist anywhere. And it's really interesting because Jesus had his 12 disciples. And as a lot of scientists have found out, when it comes to the creation of birth, it takes at least 12 sperm to create a specific vibration that 13th sperm can slip in and impregnate that ovum. And so from my understanding, that's what Christ was doing, was he was restructuring the creative matrix of our planet to restructure it into a way that would allow beings to live as 100% manifestations of love. Whether or not that's not the case, you know, who knows? But I still think if we can find beautiful metaphors within these stories and they can in some way, shape, or form improve our life and improve our understandings of ourselves, I think that the story is worth looking at. So let's get back into the heart. I'm going to do another one of these. I'm going to hit these tuning forks again just so we can kind of recenter and get a little bit of benefit from these beautiful healing tones. And then afterwards, the vowel note that I has been told as the vowel note for the heart is ah. So after I do this, I'm just going to do a little bit of toning for ah. And if you're listening, please feel free to jump in and to tone along with the vowel note of ah. And another trick that I do is I put my hand right on my heart center, and I know that I'm hitting those notes when it rumbles within my chest. So if you are listening in and you're doing this on your own and you're having a little bit of fun enjoying it, try and play around with the pitch of your voice to get that resonance, get that real rattle right in that heart space, and try and see how you respond to it after. So let's get back into the heart. Thank you. So personally, I use that practice whenever I'm feeling frustrated or discouraged or feeling like I've lost a little bit of trust in myself and my future, and where I'm a little clouded by uncertainty, or when I'm a little lonely, or whatever the case may be. I find a way to get back into that heart space. I find a way to tune my radio station back into the intuitive intelligence that my heart itself can provide. And I know that that is where the wisdom is stored. You know, it's amazing. You can learn so much by asking the right questions with a heart that's in the right place. And when it comes to that, this to me just becomes, you know, a consistent question. How can I put the intention of love into every action that I'm doing? You know, how can all of my responses be steeped with compassion and gratitude? How can I soften my defenses to let more love in? What are the ways in which I have been hurt trying to find love in my past that I've prevented myself from finding it here? How many walls have I created up because I was hurt that stopped love from coming back in after? If that wall is up and it prevents you from obtaining what you're actually trying to obtain, then it's time to take that wall down. And I think that's where a lot of self-love comes in. And so what is your practice of self-love, and what does that mean to you? Practicing self-love is something that I think is so fundamentally important, but I think a lot of people in our culture, in our day and age, do very poorly. Self-love is not just burying negative thoughts with positive vibes. You can't just pile on a whole bunch of affirmations and gratitude on top of a fundamental root issue that stems through your being. You can't plant around weeds because the weeds will spread. You've got to dig into that garden of your own subconscious, and you've got to find those detrimental weeds and pull them out at the roots. And all of the associated problems from that root will come when you pull it out. But the hard part is we look at all of those problems and those deep-seated traumas and those deep-seated personal growing edges with so much disdain and so little patience and so little grace. And that's where self-love is really important. It's about turning your internal responses that aren't what you'd like them to be and softening them and treating them with compassion and treating them with love and giving them the patience and the time and the consideration for them to grow into what they're supposed to be. How can we look at our scars and our wounds with compassion and forgiveness? So, the heart, what a beautiful thing. I'm pretty grateful for mine. I love any opportunity I have to use it. And I found that when I can really tune in to my heart, and if I follow the little synchronicities and I follow the little internal silent whispers that it can give me, I'll find myself in the right path. And I hope you do the same. I hope you find the love you're looking for. I hope you realize that so much love exists within yourself, and that at any moment in time, you can tune in to that first dimensional love that permeates every facet of existence, that it is present with every moment and participates in every interaction and exists within every infinitesimally small piece of your being that you are. And I hope you remember that you can tune into it. And that even if you take a minute where you're not tuned into it, that that's okay. Ain't nothing wrong. You're not a perfect creature, and life would be really boring if you were. So celebrate those flaws. Learn ways that they can fuel you to new growth so that you can become an even better version of you than you are today. And with every single step, you're growing into a more beautiful, beautiful creature, more beautiful structure. So let that lion shite. I just said shite when I was talking about love. I was trying to say, let that love shine through you. And I hope you do. So thanks again for tuning in. Jacob Pasterfield here with Freaky Fridays. My ongoing discussion for my classes, Rainbows, Dreams, and the Space in Between. Please feel free to follow, send me emails of suggestions if you want to connect, if you've got some cool information you think I'd like to peruse on through, feel free to send an email to jacobpasterfield@gmail.com, or you can send one through kumbayama@gmail.com as well. But as always, you're beautiful. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I've got these tuning forks here, so just one more time for the road. 528. I love you all. Stay freaky. Talk to you soon.